Hello, and welcome to the Afro Reads podcast with your hosts,
Amara
and Ugochi.
Afro Reads is a book review podcast that was created out of our shared love for reading African fiction books.
We talk through its themes and try to tie its key messages to our African heritage, culture, and contemporary issues.
We invite you to turn the page and let's begin.
Hello, and welcome to our third episode of the Afro Reads podcast with Ugochi and Amara. On this episode, we'll be discussing Homegoing by Yag Yasi, which is a great book, but we'll go into that a little bit later. First, we're going to talk about some current events in our personal lives. What's been going on with you, Amara?
Yeah, what's been going on? Well, I've had like very mini projects. I don't want to talk about them on the podcast because they're just babies. But they're babies I'm kind of really nurturing and hoping they will grow. Just business projects, just in case, you know, everyone is looking out for their job at this point and just having backups. But it's been really exciting. Obviously, being in the project management space, I like to get my teeth into new and exciting projects, and till I reach a goal or objective, like, I'm not at rest. So I'm in that current state where it's exciting. It's an exciting journey for me. And yes, I'm just hoping to complete my many projects.
Mm-hmm.
So you, Ugochi.
I've been having this, you know, okay, I haven't said this, but I'm pregnant. So my cravings are ridiculous. Lately, I've been craving Nzu.
And yeah, I saw you eating that earlier. And I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, and I get self-conscious about it when I eat it in front of people, because when I'm eating it in front of my husband, he gives me this weird look, like, how gross, how disgusting. But I can't help it. It like neutralizes my tongue from the taste of what I've eaten before. You know, when I eat foods, I can taste every single seasoning or chemical that was used in the food, and it's just, it leaves a lingering taste. So
don't worry, like, I've heard horror stories. I hear like some pregnant mothers, sometimes they crave gravel and stone.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
they
the same.
Eat it. And then other people I hear crave like the smell of poo.
Wow.
So I've heard also, it's like, so I think you're like mild, and yeah, your case is no, it hasn't reached that level. And
I do like the smell of like burnt rubber. That also, it's just weird.
I can't wait to like see what I would crave. Maybe sleep. I like sleeping. I'll probably just sleep more.
Good luck.
But yeah, you were asking me earlier about the Nzu chalk.
Mm-hmm.
So I've not like researched on it, but I know in secondary school we kind of studied it a bit, and we learned that it was chalk that was basically used for designing and coloring in the southeastern part of Nigeria, and basically it was used to design women's bodies, especially during ceremonies like weddings and things like that. And it's interesting as well, I think they were trying to make the paint white, like make white paint, and it was suggested we use Nzu chalk. So that's all I know about it. But and I also hear people eat it as well, like it's put in food for eating some kind of meal. I don't know much about that. So yes, at least it's edible. So it's interesting you bought it on, you told me you bought it on where?
So I got my first batch on eBay.
Yeah, some hustler somewhere is just quietly sitting in a house selling it. How much is she selling it for?
It was like £5, £2 for delivery. So I paid like £7. But I was craving
it. I wonder what quantity, like.
It was a small bag. It maybe had like 8 rocks, maybe. And I've eaten those ones all.
Yeah, someone just quietly making her money through like poor pregnant women. But it's good. You said the second batch.
Second batch was from my mother-in-law. So she had packed 3 bags of them, 3 full bags of them.
As in vexing.
Yeah.
As per, you cannot lack.
Yeah, so I have a lot. So I'm good. I'm trying not to eat it that much because I don't think it's, I honestly don't think it's like that good for you.
Really? I don't know. I just saw you eating it and I was like, damn.
I'm trying very to stop. It's a bad, it's like an addiction and I smell it too. So I just feel weird smelling and eating it. But
yeah, please let us know if you had similar experiences like and cravings in the comment section or any of our social media platforms.
Yeah, it'll make me feel better. I'm not alone.
All right, back to the book. Today we are in Ghana with Homegoing by Ya Gyasi.
Yes, such an interesting book. So it details, it follows a lineage of two half-sisters born in Ghana. Their names are Effia and Essie. But these two half-sisters separated when they were young. No, they never met, actually.
Yeah, they never actually met.
Yeah, they never met.
They're only connected through their mom. Mommy.
Yeah. So Effia becomes the wife of a British governor of the Cape Coast Castle in Ghana. And then Essie, her half-sister, is kept in the castle as a slave to be taken to the United States. So she ends up in the United States. And that's where her lineage begins. So you have a story or dichotomy of a lineage in Ghana and a lineage in the United States. And it's interesting to see their development in these two settings. So it's nice that the book explores those lineages of these two in Ghana and
America.
Yes. So now we'll go into some themes.
Yes, we go into some themes. So we're going to talk about the major themes because I was telling Uguchi I could sit down and analyze this book for the whole day. And when I start, I literally don't stop. I just think it's so well written. It's like a mini, very interesting history book because it just touches on so many key periods in history that I wasn't really aware of or I didn't know much about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's off Homegoing that we decided to try our hands on the podcast.
Yeah, because of... Well, first of all, this author does a wonderful job incorporating all of these characters. There's so many characters.
Yes.
I think there's seven generations that she goes through on each end. Seven generations, right? But these two lineages. So yeah. She does a good job of keeping them organized so that we can follow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Between the, like, you know, when you write in the lines kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah, color in the lines.
Yes. Yeah. And not only keeping them organized, but aligning them with these historical events.
Yes. So it was just a joy to read in that sense. Mm-hmm. So we'll touch on the key themes. Hopefully we can run through them and then, yes, discuss other things and then maybe end with how the book came to a whole 360 and kind of found closure.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it was very interesting. Earlier on in the evening, you were talking about the Yam Curse.
Yeah, the Yam Curse. So the book begins with the Yam Curse. Effia's father, so Effia and Essie, remember, are the two sisters, two half-sisters whose lineages we follow in the United States and then in Ghana as well. So their father had left his first wife named Baba. Baba is the one who...
Baba is the stepmom.
Stepmom, yes.
Yeah.
To Effia.
Yeah.
There was a fire that happened in his village.
Yeah.
A bad fire.
So the fire, I think, like, ravaged his crops and that of most of the villagers. So it was known as the Great Fire because it affected the village adversely. And he tried, when he was recollecting the events, he said that it actually destroyed how many?
Seven yams,
yes.
Yeah, so let me read the short part of the book. It's in the beginning.
Yeah.
It says, Cobb, which is the father, had lost seven yams. He felt each loss as a blow to his own family. He knew then that the memory of the fire that burned, then fled, would haunt him, his children, and his children's children for as long as the line continued. So I thought that was interesting because the book goes through seven generations and he lost seven yams.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you read the book, at the end, it's the seventh generation from each side that kind of reconnects.
Yeah.
So it's like a curse.
Yeah.
The loss of the seven yams was a curse for his seven generations. I thought that was an interesting theme.
And it's interesting. And you tend to wonder if that curse kind of happened to him based on the fact that he sexually abused Mami, who was his, I guess, servant or slave or some sort. because she ran away after during the Great Fire and left her daughter Ifeah. But you just tend to wonder if that happened to him and him losing his yams because of his kind of sin or what mm-hmm. the atrocity he had committed.
Mm-hmm.
But moving on, another very interesting part of the book is the politics of slave trade. And what we know growing up with slave trade was just mostly told by, you know, British people coming to Africa, enslaving indigenes of Africa and taking them back to the UK and other colonies and then to the Americas as well. What the author tries to do here is also tie the African connection to that slave trade, basically, to that trade. So it's interesting that the Africans themselves bought into the idea of slave trade because at that time it was actually lucrative. They sat down and studied numbers and found out that capturing prisoners of war, so different villages fought each other, and capturing people from that and then selling them off to foreign people in some foreign land, they didn't really mind what was being done after they were sold, as long as they got money and mm-hmm. with that more wealth.
It was a business.
It was a fair trade kind of business in mm-hmm. that era. And what we found interesting as well with that was that obviously there was no consideration of human rights. Nobody really cared that people were chained. All they saw was that they were victors and they were victorious in the war, and their basically, the people that they conquered were sold off mm-hmm. as slaves, and that's all that mattered in that sense. So it kind of, in a way, the author does an interesting thing of kind of saying, okay, we were all kind of in this situation with when it comes to the slave trade. Africans equally as guilty as the slave traders,
mm-hmm.
you know. But at the same time, also giving us that sense of pride in a way.
How so?
Sense of pride in a way. Not that we saw, obviously, selling like your fellow human beings mm-hmm. is no ideal and it's kind of barbaric in this day and age. But sense of pride in the sense that we thought about the mathematics and the economics of things before venturing out. I remember the king that Ifeah was supposed to marry, you know, was saying that, okay, he was very particular about the British people he was going to trade with, and he kept he had strategies on who to talk to and who not to talk to, and there was this kind of decision to just be a free market for all so that they are more confused and there's no monopoly. And it's just interesting that even in that time people were thinking about the economics of things and how it would work for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, morally, it was wrong. But
yeah, and we have to remember also that human rights is evolving. So yeah. Back then, you know, it was definitely people were more barbaric, not just in Ghana, not just in Africa, everywhere. The yeah. way people made war,
yeah,
killed others, very barbaric. So we have to keep that in mind when we read this history of the slave trade.
Yeah.
Because they were also enslaving their own people, trading their own people.
Yeah, Africans were enslaving their own people. And even till today, like what's going on in Libya and in other countries, and even in Nigeria, like
yeah.
the whole house girl.
Yeah.
It's not slave trade and it's not slavery at all. But again, that there are certain class of people that you treat a certain way, different from yourself and your children. There's that dichotomy that still exists.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we found quite prominent in the book, in the way that we are more alike than you actually think, and there's no victim or perpetrator. We're all in it thinking economically of how mm-hmm. it benefits oneself.
Right.
In that sense.
Right.
Yeah. So that was an interesting theme we also came across.
Mm-hmm.
Then another interesting one was the character development. It was not really a theme as such. It's just something that was noticed that, for instance, I felt like the Ghana characters were a bit more developed. They had personalities that you could draw to and just different innuendos and idiosyncrasies. Whereas I felt like the American side of things were, first of all, from SCA to NES and then NES to Kojo, I didn't feel there was a lot told there. It's not really a criticism of maybe to say that the author didn't do enough research. Like, I applaud her for the little resource available for that period of time, the first three characters that appeared in America. But it goes again to really show, and it's really prominent, that there's really a lot of gap in that history, in that period of history, about slaves and how they kind of live their lives. And I mean, there are resources there, but it's not.
Yeah. But do you think she did that on purpose? Because it's easy to develop a character if you're writing a character's personality, I should say.
Yeah, maybe she did.
Let me not say that it's easy to develop. I'm not a writer.
Yeah.
But I can see that developing a character's personality in writing can be, it's doable.
It's doable. And I guess because it's fiction, you can add or subtract all you like.
Mm-hmm.
But especially Essie, I felt Essie's story was unfinished. Ness's story was like 2 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Kojo, yeah. You know, it really started from H. Mm-hmm. And you could see more development there. In her interview, funny enough, she said that she also struggled with the early Ghana characters. So the Effia and down to Key or K, I don't remember. And then K-Sons.
Quay.
Something. Yeah, she struggled with that. And then, but she was able to come up with a good storyline based on past oral tradition. So just to say, she struggled with that as well. But mm-hmm. she was able to piece something together based on oral tradition. Whereas when you cross over to the American side, it's a bit bare.
And I feel like there's more information on the American side in terms of the slave trade, slavery, versus the oral tradition part that she's talking about.
Oh,
In real life, yeah. So that's why I feel like there is more information on that to develop a character versus developing a character based off of stories that have been passed down to you, and you not going in and researching them yourself.
Maybe what it is that she's Ghanaian, actually, and then I think went to America to study. So she's not African-American. So me or you, well, me basically growing up in Nigeria, and I can go to my village anytime and I know who to ask for information.
Mm, good point.
She just knows where to source it right there, mm-hmm. as opposed to like maybe a neutral writer, maybe a British writer, for instance, deciding to write on that period of history and deciding like the African-American roots and the slavery period, there's more to write about from a neutral point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But her, it's more lopsided because she's Ghanaian,
mm-hmm.
and seemed to have grown up more in Ghana than in America.
Well, she came to America when she was 2.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll scrap that. But I don't know. I just found it interesting. But I might be wrong. I might be wrong on the character development side. But another very interesting theme was the stages of mental development and just being and identifying as Black.
Right. So I listed 4. Maybe there's more, I'm not sure. But the 4 main ones, slavery, Christianity, colonization, and I guess the present, which is help from foreign aid or foreign entities. So you have slavery where you have foreigners come in. And I'm going to present this through, I guess, the eyes of someone living in Africa and this happening. You have slavery coming in and you're making deals, right? Selling your people for, you know, just for economics.
Mm-hmm.
But what that does to the psyche, right? You're selling off your people to foreign entities. And many began to wake up, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, many began to wake up. There was that Ashanti war that was fought in the book to try and kind of regain their prominence. So yes, mm-hmm. they began to fight back.
They began to fight back. And so once they began to fight back, then you have foreign entities coming in and saying, you know, slavery was wrong. You know, we made a mistake. So we're going to counteract that by bringing in Christianity and, you know, trying to be nice, giving, whatever. So then Christianity comes in, and not saying that Christianity is bad, but it, in the process, kind of erased tradition, kind of put tradition on the back burner, right? So when you lose your tradition, you're in part losing your culture.
Culture, your heritage, your history, your sense of identity, basically.
Yes, sense of identity. So you have slavery, then you have the further loss of identity through bringing in Christianity. Mm-hmm. And then you have colonization. So once you've gotten people to kind of submit into your religion, accept these foreigners to teach them about this religion and kind of and dismiss your own culture, then mentally you are more able to receive these people kind of ruling your land naturally.
Yes, but I mean, they came in with guns. I mean, I think people were fighting with machetes, and they came in with guns and like cleared everyone in like 20 minutes and they're like, you're done, and we have your land, or we have your city. But the main thing is that as they were coming in, I think Christianity was coming in. So there was that, it was coming in from both sides, where we think your economy can be rearranged and your way of life and your culture and then your religion too. So everything was happening at once, you know. So further kind of brutalizing, again, our sense of self and identity. And
making it harder to fight.
Making it harder to fight, and then as you go through generations and generations, even just forgetting what it was like before that took place.
Right. Yeah. So I thought that was, I guess, an interesting point. And then colonization happens, and after that, you know, these countries are fighting for their freedom, but the psyche of the land has already been, it's been damaged to a point where things aren't working. And you're more receptive to accepting help from foreigners.
Yeah.
Just as you were with Christianity coming in, just as you were not necessarily accepting with colonization, but it happened. So at this point, when people are offering you free money, you're just like, okay, you know, you've kind of lost your identity, your culture. I mean, it's still there, but a new
tool again to further, like, just put you in that place of always needing help and always waiting for a savior to tell you what to do, to teach you what to do, and then going through generations of that. So it's crazy how everyone talks about slave trade and the mental impact it's had on the generations that have come from slave trade in America. But in Africa, it's exactly the same. The stages you've just highlighted is still mental slavery. And so we're in a situation where we don't look at ourselves, we don't really value ourselves, value what we have, value our gifts, value the people around us. And we always look outside for something bigger, something better. And we just feed off that, and that's that.
Yeah.
So it would take a while and just more generations and just more self-love.
Or in even, yeah, recognizing these 4 points and recognizing, you know, that they've happened and what has done.
Yeah.
And then moving forward saying, okay, now we need to rebuild.
Oh, Ugochi, is easier said than done.
I know.
You know, like individually, like we're hoping people listen to this podcast. But no, just individually, you sit and reflect. But when it now comes together to being collective, you know,
that's the hard part.
There's so many forces working against you that you just sit quietly in your room and just maybe ponder, but you go out in the world and just do what the world expects you to do. So it's just hard, but
yeah,
we're hoping more people in our generation give it more thoughts.
Yeah, give it more thought to make a difference.
Yeah, so the interesting thing about homegoing as well, I realized, was that it really touched on different periods of history. We're not going to go into everything because, as I said, we could do this all day. But Gochi, like, based on the different periods in history, there was the slave period, there was the Jim Crow era, there was sharecropping era, there was the Pan-Africanism at the end, there was the war on drugs era as well.
Mm-hmm.
What period of history like stood out for you?
I think the part, well, when she was describing one of the characters in Ghana, and how there was, farming wasn't going well.
Mm-hmm.
Year after year, he would try to grow crops. They wouldn't grow,
mm-hmm.
pushing them into further poverty. But one year, I think it was a cocoa, he decided to farm cocoa, and it worked. And yeah. it actually brought a lot of, I guess, wealth into his village.
Yeah.
That was the part that stood out for me because it didn't happen too long ago from my generation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that my great-grandfather
mm-hmm.
In Nigeria did something similar, and he found that rubber was lucrative.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Where I married into, they harvested yams, and mm-hmm. that was lucrative for them. So that's why that period resonated with me, or that event resonated with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, mine was the sharecropping era. So I guess it wasn't really sharecropping. It was more of coal mines, I think H's period. And it's just interesting. We've not defended slavery, but we're saying that Africans as well as the slave traders had their role to play. But it's interesting what happened after slavery. So you were emancipated and everything, and you had your papers, but you were still sectioned off to certain parts of society, certain jobs, you know, to earn certain kinds of living.
Mm.
And as they said, during that era as well, the prisons were overpopulated because you just found random reasons to put ex-slaves in prison so that they still had to work for free or work for very low wages. And it just basically created cities where you either got employed on big plots of land to work as sharecroppers or coal mines or in industrial cities of that sort, mm-hmm. kind of thing. And it resonated with me because these people were not slaves. They were free, but they ended up living their lives as slaves. They knew their life expectancy was going to be short because of the conditions. So somehow they lived as slaves, but they still earned wages. And they just had to get on with it. H finally died again because of the residue, I think, in his lungs mm-hmm. from all the inhalation from coal and other very, like... Toxic chemicals, exactly. But you just subjected yourself to that life because...
You had to.
That was all you knew. You don't have a past. Your past was slave trade, was slavery. You don't have a past. And that's it. You were born, once you were born of slavery, that was your life. That's all you knew. So it was quite, even just thinking about it is very claustrophobic. And
mm-hmm.
I guess America and other parts of the world, they've come a long way in that sense of that was the thinking and the lifestyle back then. And then you've gone through all that, to civil rights, to just more forward thinking times. And obviously, it's going to keep getting better to that place where, you know, the color of your skin or your heritage or background wouldn't mean much. It should just be your merit and what you put, you know, and your efforts.
Mm-hmm. We hope we get there soon. I think people would still look down on the color of your skin regardless. But I think more so people have more freedom now and opportunity now.
Mm-hmm.
To get to a certain state, to get to a certain stage where they have power and where that power is respected.
Yeah, just to say, obviously, discrimination is not only about color of your skin.
Yeah.
It could be your gender. It could be your sexuality as well. And yeah, hopefully we evolve as human beings. I don't know if we will evolve. I don't know what next we'll evolve to, because we always find something to pick on. You know?
I think
to keep thriving, we need to show that we are better than...
There's a power struggle, and someone always needs to be put down.
Yes.
So we may evolve from the color of our skin or our gender or mm-hmm. our sexuality, but it's going to be something else.
We just don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't know yet. There's always going to be a power struggle.
Yeah. But But anyway, this is my favorite part, and that's like analyzing the actual characters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just too much. I could, yeah, I'm not going to say this again, but I could go on for hours. So, Ugochi.
Yes.
So that we can talk even longer about this. Yes. Let's split this into two. So, Ghana.
Okay.
The Ghana lineage.
Yes.
Who is your favorite?
James Richard Collins. My absolute favorite. So his father was a slave trader. Yeah, his father was a slave trader. But James was like, no, I don't want to continue this lifestyle. Even though it was lucrative still mm-hmm. at that time. He saw something wrong with it, which is one reason why, the first reason why I love him. So he decided to break away from all of that. Ventured off into a faraway village, right? And mind you, he's mixed race. So he's half Ghanaian, half British.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, light skin, they call them half castes,
yeah.
were looked down upon. So for him to venture off into a village far from the comfort of the riches that he was born into was admirable to me. And he did that. He fell in love.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't ashamed about it, right?
Yeah.
Married her and became a farmer.
Yeah. An unsuccessful farmer.
An unsuccessful farmer. But he tried. Yeah, he tried.
I never understood why. I think what's fascinating to me, what you just said, is that half-caste bit. Like, even me now, like, living abroad in the UK, like, when I go to Nigeria, I'm still fascinated to understand, like, what Oyibos are doing and what their business venture is and why they're here and they're not in their developed country
mm-hmm.
is something that I probably shouldn't admit. But yes, even at now, I'm just like, wow, and they have nice hair
mm-hmm.
and their skin is so nice and blue eyes. And it's that self-image thing that you talked about earlier. So, yeah, so it's interesting to think that in some period of history, right there in Ghana, and I think in Nigeria, but we don't know a story that can really resonate with that. But mm-hmm. right there in some village in Ghana, you being a half-caste was a bit weird and you were strange. Yeah. And I remember they also thought he brought bad luck because
His crops weren't growing.
His crops weren't growing and he was just a strange man with no background or history because no one knew who he was.
But he didn't care. He didn't care.
He didn't care, yeah. That's the truth. So mine on the Ghana part was your... Mm-hmm. Like, I just, from the moment where I found out that he was Akua's son, and he had been through that traumatic fire experience, I was left with this scar. I just fell in love with him. I can imagine he was an outsider most of his life. He was really quiet, just did his thing because I think... He got a lot of stares, probably. A lot of people pitied him because I think the village kind of knew his story.
Mm-hmm. He had that scar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also found it very interesting that he was a teacher during like the Kwame Nkrumah phase where Ghana was running for independence. And so there was a lot of skip to his step. Mm-hmm. Is that what it, like, light to his step and everything?
Mm-hmm.
And he was living in this hope and this dream of Ghana. So I can imagine him like being very ferocious in class and teaching and
excited, trying
to bring that hope and everything. And I also liked his love story where he wasn't a perfect person and somebody, you know, loved that imperfection about him.
Yeah.
And he ended up marrying, you know, the lady that served him. I think he was the cleaner. And I just like the dichotomy of their personality. Mm-hmm. She was inquisitive, you know, loud and proud. And he was like, yeah, I'm just going to be quiet now.
Yeah.
So I just really liked him. I think he was lovable. And what I found interesting about Yo is that we started his character as a very, you know, Pan-African, this is happening in Ghana, right down to the end of his life where he ended up in America.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of witness, you don't witness, but you kind of imagine that highness now descending into a low point where you just feel, yeah, he got a job in America and maybe that's why he went, but I'm sure when he was in that high point of Pan-Africanism, like, moving to America would never have been
his dream or his future.
So what would have happened then to descend to that point where you're like, all right, I'm just going to go and live out my life in America at this point? And that's how kind of the whole of Africa really started to feel in the 80s.
Yeah.
That, okay, we've been independent for like 20, 30 years. Yeah. What's going on? What's cooking?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. I really liked his story.
I always say that a lot of them came to the States.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying the States because that's what I know. To go to school and thinking after school, like, they're going to go back. And most of them didn't go back. And I don't think that they're necessarily happy about that. It, like you said, it is like a low point.
It's kind of, I have to, more of survival.
Yeah, more of survival.
I don't want to be here, but my country back home is not doing anything better. I remember a friend of a friend's uncle once said that, yes, that some of his friends from Nigeria would rather have 3 cleaning jobs in America than go back home to even just work as a middle income civil servant. They don't enjoy it, but the economic benefits of remitting money and just the security level where you don't need to worry about electricity and
infrastructure
and stuff. You're not happy here, but...
Isn't that sad? You go and search for, I guess, security and stability, but you leave, like, your heart, your family, your mom and dad, your sisters, brothers, nieces and nephews, like, you don't get to see them grow up. Yeah. So you leave your heart there and come kind of empty and live empty.
Okay. So, favorite character, America.
I would have to say, this is a tough one for me. I'd have to say Marcus, definitely Marcus. And Marcus is the 7th generation. So he's the son of a drug addict. His name is Carson. Call him Sonny. So we'll say Sonny. So he's the son of Sonny. Sonny was a drug addict. He wasn't really there for his son. But his son was kind of in a search for truth. He ended up going to college at Stanford, right? Becoming a PhD.
Yeah.
So it fascinated me that he didn't have his he motivated himself. That's the fascination. He didn't grow up in a great environment. He didn't have a good father figure to look up to. So he had to find that drive himself and go there. And even met a Ghanaian, right, who was born in the States, but her parents, her dad was Yah, which we just talked about. Yeah. And so he was interested in her culture and ended up even visiting Ghana with her at some point. So that's why I like him, because he was inquisitive about it.
And the good thing about Marcus is that his story resonates with a lot of, like, really hardworking African Americans who can trace their lineage to slavery and just, again, the mental challenge and just everything, all the struggles, the Jim Crow era, the sharecropping era, down to the civil rights movement, the war on drugs in the 80s, and just down to that, you know, against all odds, I'm here struggling, you know, in university, trying to do my PhD and just trying to break free from all that.
Right.
And yeah.
Because Marcus came from Essie's descendant, and Essie's descendants passed on the inheritance of that trauma, that fighting to survive.
Fighting to survive. Most of them didn't have identities. I mean, H was named H because his mother, I think, was chanting H.
Yeah.
And then Ness, her name came about because her mom, who was a slave, just heard goodness and was like, all right, Ness. So
the inheritance of, I don't want to say no culture, but like...
Just no lineage, no strong, no history.
Well, there's a history there.
There's a history.
But a tradition to to prop up your confidence, yeah. I guess, in the yeah. world?
Yeah, so mine in the America part was H. I love me some H. H was big and strong, and I just like the fact that against all odds story, I mean, he was a prisoner of the worst kind for years. He served in the coal mines, just, you know, chipping away the lowest. You're basically dead in that kind of status yeah. kind of thing. But yeah. he rose to that, rose to the challenge, came out a free man
yeah.
and was even made a labor union leader or something like that. Yes. Married well and settled, you know, and was just a man of the community. So I like that.
Mm-hmm. He would be my number two, second character favorite, because he didn't think that he had that leadership quality mm-hmm. in yes, him. Yes,
exactly.
But he eventually rose to the occasion and did it. He overcame that fear, I guess, mm-hmm. of being great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I really like H. And again, coming from the fact that, again, no identity. Mm-hmm. I think that's the word we were looking for. Yeah. No identity.
Yes.
He can't trace his mom, he can't trace his dad, because his mom was kidnapped, you know. He literally just had H as his inheritance.
Yeah.
And yet, coming from that to being a labor union leader, I think was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We are coming to the last segment of our discussion, which is about how the book basically tries to tie loose ends and comes round 360, I would say 360 degrees, and, you know, at the end really tries to find closure. And we saw it in the themes like the stone jewelry.
Mm-hmm. So the stone jewelry, Effie and Essie
mm-hmm.
had stone necklace from their mom, given to them from their mom.
Mm.
Essie, whose lineage went to the United States, she buried that stone necklace in the castle
yeah.
before she was transported to the mm-hmm. United States. So her lineage didn't get to, I guess, know of the stone. But Effia passed down her stone necklace generation. So that one was passed down generation to generation. So I guess that was kind of symbolic in that they were able to stay connected to their roots while
yeah.
Essie's lineage was not, because the stone was not with them.
It wasn't with them, but, you know, and I told you this was interesting, that I was disappointed that the stone, that her stone by chapter 2 had been lost.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that Marcus,
mm-hmm.
the sixth or seventh generation,
yeah.
came back to Elmina Castle, where she buried the stone, which yeah. was very symbolic, because, again, it's that kind of rounding it up, yeah, you know?
From the beginning, the yam curse, the seven yams that were lost.
Yes, yeah. yeah. And then also the water and fire feature that ran throughout the book. Mm-hmm. Water on the side of the American lineage mm-hmm. and fire on the side of the Ghana lineage.
The fire, so for some characters, the fire would come in and haunt them in dreams.
Yes, yeah.
There is one character where she actually burned down...
Akua.
Yeah, Akua burned down her house with her kids in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Yah came from. That's where Yah got his scar.
Yeah.
And...
So Yah was obviously... I think he had a phobia for fire. And yes. so did Marjorie, yes. his daughter, as yeah. well. And that was interesting because the fire came from Mame and Kob, which was... Their ancestor,
mm-hmm. The beginning of this ancestral.
So is that yeah. kind of loose connection where you don't know where your phobias, dreams, character, personalities all come from? It's kind of, it could be loosely based on the activities or what your ancestors did. Mm-hmm. I think she kind of does a good job in kind of keeping it fluid, but tying it loosely as well. And then on the part of water, like Essie crossing the Atlantic Ocean mm. to become a slave, and obviously witnessing her fellow captors being thrown overboard and mm-hmm. just fearing, even if being in the worst situation of her life, but being afraid to be thrown overboard as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then connecting to that. So you had that with Essie. Kojo worked on the boat, but I don't think he had any fear.
He didn't have fear, but he was very, I mean, heavily associated with water.
Yeah.
So so these this dichotomy with fire and water, it's not necessarily. Some of them had fears of them.
Or some were just fascinated.
Right.
Yes, yes. And yeah. I think we got that a lot from Kojo's story.
Mm-hmm.
And then right up to the end where we found that Marcus was afraid of the water and he was very hesitant in the end to...
To get in. And this was in Ghana. Water. So he had gone back to Ghana with Marjorie.
Yeah.
And they were at the beach and he was very afraid to get into the water.
Yeah.
But he did overcome that fear.
Yeah, yeah. And another part of the closure was, well, online I was reading reading different reviews, and a lot of slave trade diasporans, yes, or
Descendants from the slaves.
Yes, yes, yes. They really resonated with the story, and they basically said that the story spoke to them, and they could trace certain parts of their history that was, they had similar stories as well. So the book itself and the stories felt like closure.
Yeah, hence Homegoing, the title.
Yes, hence Homegoing, exactly. She was saying something about it being like something that was said as a burial, at the burial sites of like African American slaves. And it was a way of saying, even if we've been buried this far from home, kind of being buried, something about having these burial rites and being passing on in the, to the next stage or the next life is a way of connecting back to our ancestors.
To your ancestors, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the last part of the closure discussion is just Marcus's visit back to Africa. So... Mm-hmm. His ancestors, 7 generations ago, you know, left Africa to America, basically, on a boat to be sold as slaves. And it was just nice that he didn't know his ancestors, but he came back to that very spot where Essie was taken.
Taken. And Marjorie's 360 also connecting with Marcus.
Yeah, connecting with Marcus as her relation.
We don't know what happens with the two of them because they don't, it doesn't develop into a love story in the book, but
I was kind of happy with that at first because I was like, this is cliche, but they were such good people and just nice characters that love story never hurts anybody, really.
No, not everything has to end with a love story.
Yeah, but it was always, it was actually a depressing book. If you notice, none of the characters, look at it now, none of the characters had happy endings. Who had a happy ending,
please? Marcus. Marcus and Marjorie. And
so that's why you should have just dashed us the love story.
I guess. Well,
I don't know.
I was happy.
But a lot of people were happy it didn't end up as a love story.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been nice, but it also would have been weird because you know that they're
7 generations.
Seven Abba. Generations, I know.
All right. We've come to our end of review of Homegoing. We had to really keep this short and discipline ourselves. But yeah, the next book to be reviewed and discussed is... Book of Echoes.
Yeah.
We're going back to Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And this was written by... Rosanna Amaka.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, please, we invite you to come back and join in our discussion. Having announced our next book, Book of Echoes, please go and purchase it. Again, I think I read it on my Kindle, but it's also available on Audible. Read it. Tell us what you think about it in the comments if you have more questions. And let's just have a discussion around it. And then we can bring this all back to our next episode.
Yeah. And don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Follow us on Twitter at @Afro_Reads, Instagram at @AfroReadsPodcast, and our Facebook group, Afro Reads Podcast. Thank you, and we will be sharing other interesting content on our social media platforms, so, and have some informative discussions leading up to the next episode. Looking forward to you joining us on the next episode, but until then, take care and have a blessed week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.